Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, and all of it is brought to you by Dollar Shave Club. Please stop spending a fortune on all the gimmicky shave tech that you don't need. Make the smarter choice by joining Dollar Shave Club. Get your first month for only $5 with free shipping by going to dollarshaveclub.com/martini. Jim, on to the good martini, and it's actually policy related today. We love to do this when we have the opportunity, so we're going to talk about this today. This is courtesy of both Breitbart and Fox News. First, Breitbart, more than 1.1 million Americans dropped off the food stamp roll since President Trump took office in January 2017, according to the latest U.S. Department of Agriculture statistics on food stamp enrollment. Participation in the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, also known as SNAP, dropped to 41,496,255 in May of 2017, the most recent data available from the USDA. It was at 42,691,363 in January when Trump took office. According to the latest data, SNAP enrollment during the first few months of Trump's presidency decreased by 2.79%. Food stamp participation on average in 2017 has dropped to its lowest level since 2010, and the latest numbers show that this trend is continuing. Breitbart likes to chalk it up to the fact that some people are leaving the country due to Trump enforcing immigration laws, and they shouldn't be here. Fox News reported on this a couple of weeks ago, and they say a lot of the credit also belongs to states who are reinstating work requirements for SNAP benefits. Alabama especially has done so. They've seen recipients decline from over 5,500 to 831, an 85% drop. Similar changes were implemented in select counties in Georgia, and by the end of the first 3 months, the number of adults receiving benefits in three participating counties dropped 58%. We know Maine has done this as well. It's worth pointing out that this number has declined steadily since well before Trump took office, but this is one of the bigger drops since fiscal 2014, when it was up around 47 million people on SNAP assistance. So, Jim, obviously headed in the right direction, and we'll chalk that up as a good martini.
It is. And let's point out that if this is, you know, technically the recession ended in 2009, 2010. So if we really have had 8 straight years of economic growth, obviously very unevenly distributed, you'd expect the SNAP program to be reduced for the first few years of the recovery. And feel free to insert air quotes if you feel appropriate there, that you SNAP people requiring government assistance was going up. And people are saying, why is this happening? We know you traditionally, as people lose their jobs, they get rehired, they have money coming in, they should need government assistance less. Why is this increasing? Was this a sign that the jobs being created were exceptionally low paying and really not doing much to reduce people's dependence upon government programs? Now, look, I think it's safe to say that anything good that happens during the Trump presidency, President Trump will take credit for. And I don't think you can be too mad at him over that. That is just kind of traditional to all presidents and really all elected officials. I recall back in the bad old days in Washington, D.C., Marion Barry complained because he got so much grief when it snowed and the streets weren't plowed. He wanted to know why the media didn't give him credit for sunny days. I'm not making that up. He really seemed to think that he was not getting sufficient credit for good weather, as if he controlled it or it was some D.C. policy or something like that. Some people might say, God, what was he, smoking crack or something?
Well,
the point being, it is good to see people getting off of government assistance. It is good to see people having enough take-home pay that they no longer feel a need for this. If there's work requirements, maybe that's a good necessary step. Whether you want to credit state governments or you want to credit the overall economy or whether you want to credit the president, it is just good to see people no longer quite so dependent upon government and able to kind of chart their own course and set their own destiny in life. So a genuine good martini today.
Yeah, good martini, and let's hope those numbers keep continuing and people find rewarding work and there are opportunities for them to do so and we get those numbers down far, far more. All right, let's move on to the bad martini now, Jim, and this is a story getting a lot of attention on social media and beyond today. A little help here from Ed Morrissey over at Hot Air, as well as the folks over at Bloomberg who broke the story. First, Ed, this comes straight from the "someone left the irony on" department, as Mad Magazine once wrote. On the one hand, Google insists that diversity and inclusion are critical to our success as a company. On the other, a Google engineer's memo warns that they have created an ideological echo chamber and a shaming culture, one which keeps employees silent about the impact of company policies because of the possibility of being fired. How did Google rebut this memo? By firing the engineer who wrote it, of course. Over to Bloomberg. Alphabet Inc.'s Google has fired an employee who wrote an internal memo blasting the web company's diversity policies, creating a firestorm across Silicon Valley. James Damore, the Google engineer who wrote the note, confirmed his dismissal in an email saying that he had been fired for perpetuating gender stereotypes. He said he's currently exploring all possible legal remedies. Earlier on Monday, Google's CEO sent a note to employees that said portions of the memo from Damore violate our code of conduct and cross the line by advancing harmful gender stereotypes in our workplace. But he didn't say if the company was taking action against the employee. So, Jim, this was an internal system that this guy put this 10-page memo on. Talked about a lot of different things, gave his opinions as to why he thinks there are more men than women in the tech sector. He also talked about how in the Google culture, conservatives feel like they can't speak out. They feel like they're not included in the inclusive atmosphere at Google. So what do you make of Google firing the guy who was challenging the diversity pledges of this giant within the tech industry?
This has set my Twitter feed, my email, ironically, my Gmail account, and various other forms of social media on fire today. And it really, so first of all, on this memo that is accused of gender stereotyping, I'm not so sure that's really the most accurate way of characterizing it. But as we discuss this, Greg, I'd like to do a little bit of engineer stereotyping. you work in radio. Do you deal with a lot of engineers all day?
I have them here.
Can we all, those of us who are not engineers, all agree that they're a different breed of cat?
A little bit.
Of course, the cat people will probably now say, oh, that's offensive and all that kind of stuff. But I have noticed in my encounters with those who have engineering degrees, engineering backgrounds, that they tend to have a certain formula or almost, they're great mathematical minds usually. They tend to express things in ways that can rub some other folks the wrong way. And if you want to say that this memo at times is a little too blunt, a little too, draws, you know, kind of broad conclusions, fine. Although his overall point that he tries to emphasize is that he does not think that diversity is bad. He does not oppose diversity. He wants to see Google get more diverse, but he also thinks it's really important to treat people like individuals. Ironically, this is being characterized in a lot of the media coverage as an anti-diversity screed. I don't know about you, Greg. Engineers don't screed. now, by the way, the fact that I may or may not have relatives that are engineers, you can infer this from my assessment. But my assessment is that engineers generally come up with a formula that explains what the way things ought to be, and then they tell you, and then they tell you again, and then they tell you again slower. And then they conclude that you're stupid and they just harangue the bejesus out of you. But nonetheless, they don't do it out of a harmful desire, but simply this to them makes perfect sense in their mind. And you, with not having the engineering mind, don't understand that. If you want to argue that this guy wrote something that was going to alienate a good portion of his coworkers, fine. If you want to say that this is causing a certain amount of controversy, dissension within the ranks, some other folks at Google might feel insulted or attacked or something, fine. But basically, by going down this route, Google is basically acting out everything he warned about. They are basically living up to the worst stereotype of the intolerant left that completely believes in diversity, except in diversity of opinions. As long as everyone thinks the same, they're perfectly okay with diversity, which, of course, is no diversity at all. And people are just on fire about this. I think there is a good, legitimate reason. The other thing, as I mentioned in the Morning Jolt, that there's three other complications here that it seems they really did not think about before firing him, or at least you got to wonder if Google thought about before they fired him. One is his Google literally warns about the fact that people get fired for expressing opinions that are contrary to that of management, and then they fire him. He also was talking to the National Labor Relations Board right before the firing. So Google fired someone who was talking to the government about a hostile working environment. this is, you know, there are a whole bunch of NLRB regulations that say you can't fire someone once they start talking to us. And then there's two other issues. So what was the purpose of this memo? Well, in his own way, he's trying to improve the working conditions, right? He's trying to improve working conditions, and management fired him. This is the sort of thing the National Labor Relations Board exists for. And then finally, you know, this argument of whether it could be seen as a political viewpoint. by itself is not explicitly something. Apparently, California law prohibits employers from threatening to fire employees to get them to adopt or refrain from adopting a particular political course of action. We can argue about whether this memo meets that particular legal standard, but and my guess is you will see this in the course of a court battle. I think this could end up being a very high-profile one, and I think it's very clear that we need a clearer set of rules about this, because I'm going to foreshadow our third martini here. On the one hand, your employer has a right to expect you to do your best to get along with your coworkers, treat your coworkers with respect. The term hostile work environment. Apparently, every employment lawyer on my Twitter feed is telling me nobody understands what it means and everybody uses the term incorrectly. Expressing a different opinion from someone should not by itself be a hostile work environment. Otherwise, you're basically saying I can only work in environments where everybody agrees with me. That is not life. That is not the business world. That is not anywhere. This is literally the safe space mentality that you see on college campuses being brought to the workplace. And you can't have a workplace if people aren't if people are afraid to say what they really think and exchange their own ideas. So my guess is this is going to end up with a very expensive legal battle. And like I said, a great number of people are going to be paying attention to this. The kind of unnerving thing is how much Google seems utterly convinced that they're right in this and that they're not going to lose anything by firing somebody for having the audacity to write a memo that questions company policy.
I agree with every word of that. I would like to put in a good word for the Radio America engineers, though, because while they do think differently than the rest of us, less tech-savvy people like myself have been bailed out by them more times than I care to count. So I would like to thank them for keeping me on the air as much as they do. So thank you, Radio America.
Say, if sound quality doesn't seem really good for this, or at least for my part of the conversation, you'll understand why. I probably should make clear for any engineers upset by the previous segment. When I say engineers, I might be talking about my father-in-law. But anyway, that particular haranguing that there's one particular right way to do things and all other ways are wrong. But it could be any engineer out there at all. So
yes, but
we love you, engineers.
We do. They get us out of some pretty close shaves sometimes.
Indeed. And speaking of close shaves, Greg, good transition. Did you know that Dollar Shave Club is the smarter choice? Because you will get a great shave at a great price, conveniently delivered right to your door. It is a no-brainer. You no longer have to schlep to the store to buy a cheap disposable razor that gives you a cheap shave, or spend a fortune on razors with gimmicky shaving tech you don't need. You can understand that if you're an engineer, or if you're not an engineer, everybody can tell you don't need that kind of tech. As I've mentioned in past editions of this podcast, the box from Dollar Shave Club was on my desk in my home office. Mrs. Campaign Spot opens it up, looks at it. She's impressed with this. She is envious of this. She wants to use this for her legs. I will not let her because it's just that good. Gives me a very smooth shave. They give you Dr. Carver's shave butter, which is transparent for a more precise shave. You can see where you shaved and where you haven't. Helps prevent ingrown hairs, and it fights razor bumps.
I like where you've drawn your red line there, Garrity. That's a pretty important place to draw it when it comes to razors. Now, listeners to Three Martini Lunch can make the smarter choice by joining Dollar Shave Club. For a limited time, new members get their first month of the Executive Razor with a tube of Dr. Carver's Shave Butter for only $5. Just $5 with free shipping. After that, razors are just a few bucks a month. Basically, a dollar a blade. That's why they call it Dollar Shave Club. That's a $15 value for only $5. In your first month's box, you get an awesome, weighty handle, a full cassette of four cartridges, and a tube of their shave butter. After your first month, replacement cartridges ship automatically at their regular price. There are no hidden fees. There are no commitments. Cancel anytime you like. And you can only get this offer exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/martini. That's dollarshaveclub.com/martini. All right, Jim, on to the crazy martini now. And we talked a little bit about the NFL yesterday and how the Dolphins ultimately decided to go with Jay Cutler, who was planning for his broadcast career until a few days ago after Ryan Tannehill went down. And now there is increased outrage over the fact that no NFL team has signed Colin Kaepernick, which has led to Spike Lee getting involved. You reported on this today for National Review Online. You can find it at the corner. Filmmaker Spike Lee is organizing a United We Stand for Colin Kaepernick rally outside the offices of the National Football League in New York City on August 23rd. Of course, it's not the league that is preventing the former San Francisco 49ers quarterback from signing with another team. Kaepernick isn't suspended or facing any discipline from Commissioner Roger Goodell. A variety of factors are preventing Kaepernick from suiting up for another team this year. And then you go into some of the reasons, mostly that most NFL teams think they're pretty much set at QB. And then, of course, there's the cultural baggage that he brings with himself due to the anthem protests and the fact that a lot of folks think he's maybe not as good as he used to be. So, Jim, what do you make of Spike Lee inserting himself and making this the cause celeb of August?
The image that they use to promote the rally on Spike Lee's Twitter feed, it does appear that he misspelled Kaepernick. If you look closely, he's got Kaepernick and a teammate kneeling in front of it, so it's hard to tell exactly which letters were, but it certainly looks like they spelled it K-A-P-E instead of K-A-E-P. Also, just kind of an interesting question, Greg. If you really want to support Colin Kaepernick, should you really be standing? Shouldn't you be kneeling for Colin Kaepernick? We will do what he refuses to do. Now, for what it's worth, Colin Kaepernick said that he did not intend to continue his kneeling for the national anthem protest in the coming year. He has not been attracted the interest of any team, at least so far. The Baltimore Ravens had some serious injuries at quarterback. They apparently were looking at him for a while and appear to have not decided to not go with that route. The Miami Dolphins had their quarterback, Ryan Tannehill, in a non-contact injury that apparently blew out his knee again. And so they have no leading to the signing of the fantastic Jay Cutler. And, you know, people have pointed out that, look, if you're signing Jay Cutler over Colin Kaepernick, the only possible reason is racism, political bias, or you just want your team to stink. And I don't think that's a fair accusation at the Miami Dolphins, despite the franchise's all the other flaws. Let's point out, let's recall that Colin Kaepernick's, among his controversial stances, has been praised for Fidel Castro. So let's bring a guy who likes Castro to Miami, Florida, and see how the fan base responds to that one. It's not hard to imagine Miami Dolphin franchise finding itself at odds with the city's Cuban-American community and, you know, just a controversy and fan anger that they simply want to avoid. We've discussed in previous podcasts how a certain percentage of fans, 26%, according to that J.D. Power Associates, of those who said they watched less football last year than previous years, they said it was because of the anthem protests. It's not worth pointing out that obviously that means lots of other folks had other reasons, including allegations of domestic abuse and player misconduct and things like that. But, you know, some significant number of fans were clearly upset by this. Last Friday, I kind of put out this question on social media. I'm among those people who thinks that Colin Kaepernick is an idiot. And when you run around and say, I oppose police brutality, but you wear a Fidel Castro T-shirt, you clearly are spectacularly misinformed about some very basic issues in your life. When you wear socks that portray cops as pigs, I don't really think you're interested in building a better relationship between cops and the African-American community and preventing brutality. I think you just want to kind of pour gasoline on the fire, so to speak. You just really don't like cops. The question is, what do we want the consequence for this kind of controversial or, to put it more succinctly, idiotic perspective to be? And I'm not sure I like the idea. Like, I think wearing cops as pig socks is a terrible thing to do, but should you never play in the NFL ever again? Now, I put out this question on Friday, and the general consensus of a lot of Kaepernick critics was, hell yes. They're perfectly content to see Colin Kaepernick never play again. And I don't know about you, Greg. I want people to learn, right? I want people to be able to grow and evolve. And I'd like for Colin Kaepernick to realize, oh, I really shouldn't have worn those socks, right? I kind of wish you'd get to know a cop and he'd at least see how things look from the policeman's perspective. And you could actually do more to solve the problem instead of taking what seems like a incendiary and to me, unnecessarily provocative and confrontational stance. Instead of improving the situation, you're making it worse by alienating a lot of people. Right. As we saw in that J.D. Power survey, Colin Kaepernick really has set himself up in this very unique situation. He's the one man in the world who can get football fans to turn off the television and finally go out and rake leaves in the fall. He deserves some consequence for this, but it's very increasingly it looks like unless there's a slew of injuries to quarterbacks in the coming weeks and months, he's probably not going to play football this year. And that's really a surprising turn of events considering his overall level of skill. I think it's safe to argue he's on the downslope of his career. And it's kind of an interesting contrast with our second martini. My sneaking suspicion is, because I asked people on Twitter, how do you feel about Colin Kaepernick versus how do you feel about this Google executive? And I should have expected this, Greg, but I'm finding a lot of people's perspective as well. I think people I disagree with should be fired, but not people I agree with. And I think we need a better standard than that.
Well, you could be I think the argument in favor of the Google guy would be that he tried to make it internal, whereas Kaepernick definitely made it external. And with a football team, it's, one huge unit working together. And in Google, you might have some separate sectors that don't really have to interact. But your point is still well taken that you can't just decide who should be employed and who should not be based on whether or not they agree with you.
I have no problem with there being a consequence to Kaepernick for his stances. And I think it's safe to say that there has been one. If he gets a contract, it's probably going to be a heck of a lot less than it would have been if he had never taken this stance. If and when he gets a chance to get on the field again, he will probably get booed. And that strikes me as the appropriate response of, Colin Kaepernick, we think you're an idiot, right? Colin Kaepernick has chosen to exercise his free speech rights. Everybody else has the free speech right to say, Colin Kaepernick, you're an idiot, right? If you're really concerned about police brutality, you can't hold up Fidel Castro as a role model. Fidel Castro is worse than the worst police brutality cases in the United States you've ever seen, because in Cuba, it's systemic, right? In Cuba, it's not a bug, it's a feature. It's built into the system. It is a police state. You really need to get to know more about the world, Colin Kaepernick, before you start using your stature to opine about it. And that's a fair criticism, but I just don't think that as a result of that, if we find ourselves in a situation where I really strongly disagree with that guy, I want him to never work again. Well, then how different are we from the schmucks at Google? By the way, because of that, I'm guessing I'm going to have problems with Gmail later today. You know who I should call? An engineer. But I won't get any help because I made fun of them on this podcast.
Yeah, they're down a man, apparently. Jim, obviously most American cities kind of have a liberal bent to them, but what progressive enclave is eventually going to give him a chance?
You might think San Francisco, except that's where he just came from. There's Oakland. They seem pretty set with Carr, but you never know when somebody gets injured. Seattle, I suppose. I mean, really what it will be is the team that thinks it's got a shot at winning this year and needs a good quarterback and doesn't have faith in their backup quarterback. So I don't really never know. If Matt Moore, the current backup in the Dolphins, the guy who I assume is ahead of Cutler, I can hear your thoughts from here, Greg. Anybody's got to be ahead of Cutler. That maybe he will end up in Miami. And the protests outside the stadium should be a delight to behold, Greg.
Oh, no. Cutler's going to be the starter by opening day.
Ah!
Yeah. There's no way he would have given that up without fairly decent assurance that he wasn't just going to ride the pine. But that will not change his disposition throughout the season. I can assure you of that. So
I assume you saw the photo of him yesterday looking dejected, hands in pockets, shoulders slumped. It's great to know from Miami. He's in midseason form of enthusiasm already.
I saw that on your Twitter feed. So, yes, Jake, nothing has changed about Jay Cutler other than who's signing his paychecks. Jim, great as always. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Speaking of Twitter, you can follow us on Twitter. He's at Jim Garrity. I'm at Dateline_DC. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, visit our friends at Dollar Shave Club. Right now, you can get their great deal, $15 in value for only $5. DollarShaveClub.com/martini. And tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America.